One second here.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'd like to call this public meeting of the Board of Selectmen of the Town of Shebig to order on February 3rd, 2021. And we'll do a roll call vote to make sure we can hear everybody. Mr. Beaupre?
Here.
Mr. Corson?
Here.
Mr. Dyer?
Here.
Mr. Hill?
Here.
Ms. Ophont?
Here.
And Mr. Poria?
Here.
And Ms. Damon? I guess you could hear me if you all answered, so that was a good test. All right, so we're going to just jump right in. And are there any comments from the public for items that are not on the agenda? I don't see any hands up. Anybody else see a hand up?
Nope, no hands.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on. If you want to stay till the end of the meeting, if you think of something, we're coming back to other items. So, all right, well, I would like to ask Mr. Poria if he would like to give his town administrator, town treasurer report.
Okay. So the treasurer report I'll bring to you at the next meeting. We were trying to figure out reconciling the payroll, so it doesn't add up yet. So I won't bring it that to you tonight. But
yeah,
the compactor was installed. I don't have a container there, if any of you were wondering, because I'm waiting until we decide what we're going to do with the trash contract. I don't want to have Troiano bring one out if there is a chance that we're going to go with a different vendor. So I'll wait until we make that decision here in the next couple of weeks. Going on with that, I'm still waiting on details from Troiano. I have all the other numbers, but without the container numbers, it doesn't really give you a full picture of the cost. So once I can get that back from them, I'll bring that to you hopefully next week. I did receive a preliminary scope of work from Barney Baker about the 80-foot ramps. And I have some more questions into him, but I'll be bringing that to you probably at the next meeting for your consideration. The next item is the Indian Point Road. I'm not sure what the direction is gonna be from the board on this, but as you're probably aware, the erosion is getting dangerously close to the road. At one point, it is actually to the shoulder of the road. Public Services and I go down there regularly to take a look at it to make sure that it's not getting worse, mostly after storms, just to make sure that the road is still passable. I have contacted DEP and I've received some preliminary explanations from them about what we may or may not be able to do. The road has an exception, so we can do what we need to within the roadway, but in order to add any, the preliminary thoughts from DEP is that we can't encroach onto the shoreline, meaning we can't put anything down into that area that is eroded. We can't put any big rocks down there unless we have a plan that's basically approved by them before we can do that kind of work. But they still have some questions into their different groups who all have to put an input, but that seems to be the initial response about that. And my last point would be is there is a little bit of money in the Indian Point Reserve Fund, but it's nowhere near what anything, if there was any choice to do something down there, we do not have adequate monies right now to deal with any serious repairs to that road.
I've got a quick question, Justin, and then I'm gonna, if Bo's got his hand up, but how much money is in that account right now?
I believe we've put 5,300 in there the last 2 years. I think there's about 15,000. I don't have that. I don't have the reserves right in front of me, but I think okay. There might be like 13,000 or 15,000 in there right now.
Okay, thanks. Bo?
Don't we have a contract with them? We have some kind of contract or agreement.
We do that. We're in charge of the road. Yeah, that's our agreement.
So we're
public access is dependent on us keeping the road open.
Okay, so that falls all on the town?
Right, that was part of the agreement to provide the public access. That's why when we had the Patriots Day storm and it was all washed out, FEMA paid for the whole thing.
Okay.
I had a conversation. Phyllis Bruna had called me, and apparently now they have two organizations, Indian Island organizations. One is the Indian Island Company and the other's the Indian Island Association. It's basically the same people with different purposes, I guess. But they're working on a long range plan, and she said she was going to call me back Monday when she got back to Seattle, and she spoke with her husband. I told her that you'd been speaking with Bob, and she was happy about that. And, you know, I think they've got to start thinking about what, you know, where do they want that road to go? And, you know, are we going to go in a different, are we going to move inland, or what are we going to do? So it's really all really up in the air, but we have an obligation. If we want people to be able to get to Little Chibig, we have an obligation to work with them with this road situation. So anyway, I guess we're staying tuned on that. Justin?
Yeah. Yeah, we're watching it. If anything happens, we might have to make a decision quickly about whether we block the road, because I mean, obviously if it becomes unsafe, we can't have people driving down it.
Right. Right. We don't want anybody.
Keep our fingers crossed that doesn't happen. Right.
Anyone else have a question about in anything that Justin's talked about so far? Okay.
And just the last thing, I just wanted to make see if there was any objection to me supporting a bill, basically, which would allow this type of meeting to occur after the COVID executive orders are lifted. It is an MMA initiative that they're putting forward on behalf of town so that meetings can be conducted like this after the COVID emergency. But before I put my name on anything, since I would be speaking as the town administrator, I want to make sure there wasn't an objection from the board.
Okay, do I have a motion to authorize the town administrator to write a letter in support of, to submit testimony regarding continuing these kinds of meetings in the future. David?
Yeah, I'll make that motion as read by Donna.
Okay, is there a second for that?
I'll second.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Anyone have any discussion? Jay, and then Mark.
I assume that what this means is that if we opt for Zoom meetings or whatever, after this is gone, as opposed to in personal meetings, that's what we can do. It doesn't eliminate, I mean, I think we need to go back to personal meetings on as soon as possible basis. You know, just like we need to go back to town meeting on as soon as possible basis. So as long as it doesn't exclude that, it just means that we're allowed to do it.
That's the intent. Yeah.
I agree with you, Jay. And I think that we all want to get back in person, but this would give us an opportunity if, you know, we wanted to do something different occasionally, we'd be able to do it. Mark?
Yeah, basically Jay said what I was thinking. As long as it doesn't keep us from having in-person meetings if we want them, if it allows us to have electronic Zoom meetings if we want them, then I'm fine with Justin signing in on that.
The way the bill is written is it gives the town complete discretion over whether they want to do it, how they want to do it. Obviously the bill will be amended in committee in various ways, but right now the way it's written is it's very much giving the authority to the town to do it the way that it sees fit.
Okay. I think this would be a good bill, and a good way to think about it is if we have a topic that we try to get to a large part of the community that don't come to the meeting or don't feel comfortable coming to the meeting, this would be a way to have, you know, more people come to the meeting.
Right. I agree. Anyone in the audience, any attendees have any comments on this? Just to let you know, right now there's nothing to preclude us from meeting if we wanted to in the hall. We have chosen not to do that. My brother-in-law is on the school board in Lewiston, and they do meet. They limit the number of people. You know, you can only have so many people in there. They have to socially distance. I think as a town, we decided that we just didn't want to put people into that kind of jeopardy right now. But just to remind people that we can do that right now. All right, so let's do a quick roll call vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Damon is yes. Thank you very much.
That's all I have.
Okay, anyone else have any questions of the town administrator? All right, seeing none, we can quickly, I think, dispense with some of these agenda items. I don't even know if they were necessary, but I didn't want to hold up these projects that the voters approved. And it just seemed like it would make sense to authorize the town administrator. 140 says to complete the land swap with the Granel family and sign any necessary documents. Is there anyone who would
like to? No move.
Thank you, Jay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Bo seconded. David?
I'd just like to mention that Andy Granel's in the audience if he'd like to say anything.
Right. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to say anything, Andy? And I do not see Andy. Oh, there it is. His hand's up. Okay, Andy, I think you're set.
You can say anything you need to.
Are you unmuted, Andy?
Well, I didn't see his hand up, but I did authorize talking, so.
Oh, okay, maybe. Oh, so you're the one who did that.
I did that.
All right, Andy, don't feel you have to say anything. All right, so is there anyone on the board that wants to that has any comments about this, or can we just quickly move forward? Mark?
I'd like to thank Jay for his work on this.
Yes, I want to thank Jay and Andy, and because, you know, they both thought outside the box, and this is a great example of a private-public partnership, and thank you both for making this happen, and you can see the voters overwhelmingly supported this. So
don't forget Chris Loader and Jeff Suma.
Yeah. Oh, they were on your committee. That's right. Yeah. Thank you. All right. So Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill? And I'm a yes, and that's unanimous. All right. The next 21-141 is the same idea. We're just authorizing the town administrator to accept the drainage easement from Roy and Suzanne Jackson and John Riley and to sign any necessary documents. Again, this was overwhelmingly supported at our referendum town meeting. Is there a motion? David?
I move to authorize the town administrator to accept the drainage easement from Roy and Suzanne Jackson and John Riley and to sign any necessary documents.
I'll second.
And both seconded. All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any comments? All right, anyone in the audience? All right, I'm going to call for a vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon, and we've gotten through that. The next item is 142. Review the contract with the Animal Refuge League of Greater Portland. Is there a motion to approve this contract?
I move to approve the contract.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Jay. Is there any discussion from the board or any comments from the town administrator?
This is the same contract as we've had.
Right.
There are no changes. And it's worked.
Right.
Done.
Anyone else on the board before I go to the attendees? Any attendees would like to make a comment about the Animal Refuge League contract? This enables the animal control officer to have a place for these animals to go so they don't take them to Christine's house and she has to babysit. No, that's not the main reason. That was just a joke, okay. That's off the record, Christine. Okay, so let's call for a vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill? And yes. I am a yes. The next is 21-143 to review and renew our contract with the Cumberland County Deputy Services. I'd like to turn this over to Mr. Poria.
This is essentially all the meat or all the language of the contract is exactly the same as it was last year. There's a slight increase in the amount. But other than that, it's the same thing you've been looking at before. And my understanding is that Mailman is going to return again if you approve this.
Is there anyone who has a comment or a question before I ask for a motion? Well, we can ask for a motion and still have a comment. Mark?
Justin, forgive me that I don't have the exact number, but in the new proposed operational budget under law enforcement for this contracted services line, you have $34,000 in change, and this one is $31,517.57. So I didn't quite understand your comment that this was an increase.
The amount that was on that line item, I believe, is the same from last year because there was enough money to cover this cost. If I had my notes in front of me for the budget, which I can certainly explain to you on Saturday, there is a couple of other ancillary things that come out of that line as well that add on to the amount above the $31,000. That's why there's a little extra money in there.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Plus, don't forget we've got the housing.
That was my question. Yep. Is that in a different place in the budget? I mean, I know it has nothing to do with this contract.
No, it doesn't. I think that might be on that line. Let me see. Sorry, I wasn't prepared for this here. 31.
I was thinking it had to do with something contracted services or rentals or something that might be someplace in a totally different place.
I think it's in that. I think it's all in that line, but I will get that information. I don't have the one with my notes on it in front of me, so I'm guessing.
Last year, the owner wrote us a letter and said he was going up to 7,000. So just to make that. One of the things when I looked at this, and maybe I haven't looked carefully enough in the past, but it looks like that we pay 5 vacation days when somebody's here for 2.5 months. Do part-time people get, I mean, these look like full-time benefits, and you were dealing with somebody who is retired and we're paying for vacation days and a full, you know, like, I mean, $6,700 in health insurance. And for me, those and retirement, and the person's already retired.
I'm not sure if that's a contractual obligation from their side, where they have to provide. I can get those answers for you. I can ask them.
Yeah, I mean, they were just kind of red flags, because when we have it was one thing when we had somebody who was a regular employee of the sheriff's department, but when we have somebody who is working part time, it just seems like they must have really good benefits, and maybe we all should go to work for the sheriff's department. Bo.
I think since he's working, he's under the Cumberland County, that the Cumberland County has got to do that. If you hire somebody to work for you, you have to have health care. You have to have all the mumbo jumbo that goes with it.
Well, the thing is, though, you have if you're retired, you have a health insurance plan, and it's totally different from this kind of plan. So I don't know if they contribute. Anyway, I would like to have some answers to some of those questions, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And maybe I'm just overthinking this.
So are we tabling it, or?
I don't know. That would be my recommendation, but we can easily. When do we have to have signed this?
He didn't send a date back that there was a date. I don't think it's a big hurry. I asked him for it because I was putting the budget together. So
right.
That's why we have it now. But
yeah, I don't know. I'm just one person. For me, I just was curious about that.
So I move to table this till we find out that information that Donna's asking about the health insurance and vacation and in the what was the other thing?
Yeah. Retirement, Social Security, workman's comp.
Yeah, thank you.
All of those things that, you know, if you're retired, you're not putting money into retirement.
Well, the only just to go back a second. Social Security is mandated. Workman's comp is mandated. The retirement, I'm not sure what that means, but if that's part of the Cumberland program, then that's going to be pretty much mandated. The only question I can see here is family health insurance, you know, for the 2.5 months. If that's what Cumberland's paying, then that's for him. And they've got him on the books, then that's what they're going to want.
Well, that's my question. I never brought up workman's comp and Social Security. I know that. It's just, I mean, I'm a public employee, retired, who goes back and periodically works for the same place. And it's not how they usually do it. So I didn't know if this is just a boilerplate contract that they would have as if they were sending somebody over here. You know, that's my point. So anyway, all right. So do we need a motion to table or, no. I mean, Bo's already made it. So.
Yeah.
Did somebody second it?
I'll second it.
I don't think we need a motion. We just need to ask.
No, we just need to say we're going to table it and come back. I think
table it and come back with responses to your questions.
Yeah. All right. By consensus, are we okay with that?
Sure.
All right. Let's move on to the next item is to review and approve the earned pay leave policy.
Justin.
Yes.
Could you point out what the changes are as far as on the policy?
This is just a new policy that will only affect those employees that are deemed eligible for this new earned pay. So it's basically separated from the personnel policy. So this just covers those employees that are not in the personnel policy. So I'm not changing any current language for the employees that are already covered.
All right.
Thank you. David.
And just to be clear, the earned paid leave policy that's in our packets is your draft of what you're proposing?
Yes.
Okay. Is anyone have any other substantive questions to ask about this item? Justin brought it to us last time at our last meeting, and it's something that's being dictated by is it the state, right? The state has this
state law. Yep.
And so what we had to do is bring our policies into compliance. So instead of trying to edit the policy we have now and try to solve everybody's problem in one, it's just, this will be in the personnel policy, but as a separate item. Is that right?
It can be if you want me to put it in there, or it could just be a standalone employment policy. It's up to you where...
I guess
I can include it as an addendum in the
to add it to the handbook so we don't lose it. Lose track of it.
That's reasonable. Yep.
Anyone else? Mark?
Justin, am I correct in thinking that 40 hours is the maximum that an employee may ask for per year?
Yes.
Okay. That's correct. And they can carry over up to that amount to the next year if not used.
They can carry it over, but they can at no time accumulate more than 40. So if they don't use it in 1 year and they bring them into the next, they won't accumulate any more until they use some of it.
Okay. And the statement at the bottom that says any unused earned time will be paid to the employee by compensation when they leave the town. Is that mandated by state law?
My understanding is that is a choice. I mimicked it off of what's in the currently in the personnel manual, which you allow that to happen now for other employees. So I just followed the same theme. But I do believe that that is a choice that you can make. You can choose whether to pay that out or not.
Yeah, so excuse me for forgetting that portion of our employee handbook. So right now we compensate 40 hours of earned time, I think is the term probably in our handbook, upon separation.
We compensate our employees for all of the time that they have earned in the vacation category when they leave. So if they have more than 40 hours, they get all the time they've earned, they get compensated for when they terminate.
Gotcha. And I'm probably getting confused with sick time, which is not compensated.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thanks, Donna.
Okay. So does anyone else have any more questions before I'm going to ask one quick one. How many positions does this include?
There's still a little bit of question about that because the rules are kind of vague. So as we move through this, I'm going to be asking questions either of the attorney or MMA, but it's basically all the employees that aren't currently covered under the vacation policy, except for the emergency calls don't count. So the firefighters that get called out to a fire are exempted from this. They don't earn this time for that. But so we would have Ralph in his administrative capacity as fire chief, Steve in his administrative capacity as the administrative person for the fire department, and at the cemetery, Steve again in his capacity as the ACO. I'm trying to think. I think the other employees are already accumulating vacation. Gail and Gennaro are already accumulating
vacation. Or maybe part-time public works.
Yes. Yep. So Billy down there, he would, when he's working, he would accumulate this as well.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any of the attendees have any questions or comments about this policy? All right. Did we have a motion? I don't think we did actually got a motion.
I move to accept the earned pay leave policy, so written, as written, I mean.
Okay, thank you. A second?
Seconded.
Jay seconded. And all right, so we're going to take a quick vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon is yes. And then we have to consider any update on the Stone Wharf dredging project.
If I may, Donna. Yes. I do have a communication from Andrew Grinnell I'd like to just read into the record here. Thanks to Jay, Chris Loader, who came up with the original concept, I believe, for the needed creative, timely, and ready and steady work to bring this land swap to a successful conclusion. We'll be in touch with Justin to follow up. If there was ever a win-win, this would have to qualify. On behalf of all Granell Cottage shareholders, again, thank you. I just wanted to read that.
Thank you, David. And thank you, Andy, for playing with us. That's great. All right, so the next one is about the dredging. And we had a letter from the EPA. I mean, the Army Corps got a letter from the EPA regarding their concerns about the eelgrass and the moorings and wanting to, and suggesting that people move their moorings out of the eelgrass field. And I think they're still discussing that. That's just kind of a comment. And I don't know where that's going to go. And I got the contact information regarding the ownership of the flats at the golf course from Mark Cable, and I forwarded it to Jim Hood, and I haven't heard back from him. I just sent it yesterday. So when I in my last communication with Mark Hable, he said the reason that, because this is a federal program, that they want it to be public ownership, so that in the future, the golf course or whatever, somebody couldn't come back and say, you know, this is our property. And unfortunately, we live in Maine, and we have that, we inherited somehow that Maine, Massachusetts, that Massachusetts rule about the flats. And so hopefully, I mean, Jim talked about maybe trying to do a license. I'm not sure they're going to go along with that. And the other question that I asked Jim to ask is, does that have to include any of the upland? Because in one of the correspondence that I saw, it said something about 35 feet above high water. Well, the golf course isn't going to want to give us 35 feet above high water. It's almost up to the seventh green. So if this whole thing gets held up because of mud flats, you know, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. But anyway, I don't think we should worry about it till it's something to worry about. But it needs to be on our radar. Justin, do you have anything in addition to that? And then, Bo, I will answer your question.
No, I don't think so. I think that pretty much sums up the letter we got from DEP.
Yeah. Bo?
I hate to say the big word, but eminent domain. Is it possible we take it over?
We take the mud flats. Yeah, it's possible. You know, I have a comment.
It doesn't hold up anything if it comes to that point where it's.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think it certainly should be on the table.
I know it'll be a fight, but.
Yeah.
Well, how about an easement?
Well, this is what Jim is thinking, an easement or a license. But from what Mark Hable was saying, they want you to have the ownership in fee. And we have a calling card of my husband's great, great grandfather who sold the mudflats in Portland. They owned the rights to those. And he had a million square yards or feet or something of mudflats for sale. And actually they had to sign off when they built 95 and put 95 through there. And, you know, problem within Maine. So when you say your prayers tonight, we can get through the mud flats. Anyone else have a question about dredging? My internet's unstable, so if you lose what's happened. The other thing I was thinking about with the dredging is we published the letter or the announcement, Justin, that we were supposed to publish? Can you hear me? Oh, you're muted.
You're muted, Justin.
Sorry. I believe we did, right, Chris? We put those ads for the dredging in the paper and everything, right? We did
yes.
last week, yeah.
Okay,
that's
great.
That's
I mean, we've done all, we've done all we can do. I mean, I think. Anyone in the audience have a comment about or a question about the dredging situation?
Jen Valeska, who I suspect is not Jen, has his hand up, and I will allow to talk. Okay. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
It is Jen. Hi.
It's Jen. I was just listening to your talk about the mud flats, and I have a question, which is the dredging in the past, I don't think has ever gone up into those mud flats. And I wondered why now are we dredging the mud flats?
Well, I can tell you they're going to create a bigger turning basin for the barge. So the barge will be able to run in a little bit longer during the day when they have the tides. That's one reason. And so, but this has never been, the real reason is this has never been a federal project before. That is why we've never had to do it before. But this is a federal regulation as opposed to we've just done it locally when we were part of the town of Cumberland. And so it's because it's a federal project. This is, that's the real reason.
Because the federal guidelines make it necessary to dredge the mud flats?
No, because the federal government requires that they, that we have ownership in all of the flats, that they will be at low tide. The whole area is mud flat all the way out past the end of the wharf. Mm-hmm. We're not just talking about one little piece of mud flats. We're talking about the whole area where we dredge is actually a mud flat, and that's why we're dredging. And so it's because it's a federal project. We've been dredging mud flats there since probably the middle 1800s.
Yeah, because I didn't understand why, you know, if it was just so that CTC could barge a little longer in a day, that didn't make sense to me to go through all these extra steps. But now I understand, because it's federally necessary to get ownership of all the mud flats.
The mud flats that are going to be dredged.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else? Okay, let's keep moving here. We have 146. We added this a couple of days ago. It didn't go out last Friday. It went out, I think, on Monday. To consider, I don't have the updated for the exact language, but to consider creating a survey for the possibility of COVID sign up. Somebody else can read the exact wording. But the idea behind this is, if the possibility ever came that we would be able to have a clinic or something here on Chibig, that we would already have a registry of names of people who would want to avail themselves of that. At the last CART meeting, this issue came up, and at that point, the question was, you know, how many people are over 70? Because that was the cohort that was being, that had qualified at that point. And Beverly and I went, and we spent quite a bit of time, and we came up with close to 110 people who are living on this island right now who are 70 or over. Now, since that time, a lot of people like Doug and I, and a lot of other people that I know, have had the vaccine. So the numbers right now that we're talking about have diminished quite a bit. But the idea is, you know, we have some people who are homebound or whatever. And if we have this information and vaccine became available, then we'd be ready to go. So that's where this came from. And I'm going to turn this over to David for more information.
Thanks, Donna. Yeah, you summarized it well. The purpose of this is really to be ready if and when we can do inoculations, vaccinations on the island. So it has nothing to do with who's going to be doing them, whether it's going to be the island council or whether it's going to be the CDC coming over here or anything else, but rather be ready with a list of names prioritized so that we can make that happen. And in a way, it actually makes it possible to make it more likely that we can get somebody, one group or another, to come over and to the main or from the mainland to do that for us. So I'm going to share the screen here and put up what this is. I'll very quickly go through it. The first thing is a preamble, which I won't bother to read because it summarizes really basically what Donna just said and what I just said. It's 10 quick questions, most of which, your name, your address, do you live on Chibig? Are you able to drive on Chibig? Your date of birth, asking for the current age, you know, kind of belt and suspenders, email address, preferred telephone number. And then two really questions, two questions that really make up the guts of the survey. Are you interested in getting vaccinated for COVID-19? Yes, I want to do it on Shebig, or I'm going to do it somewhere else, or I've already been vaccinated. I'm not sure. Please send more information, which the CCTT would be prepared to do if people have questions. Then the last question, and this is what would be used to prioritize people, indicate the category or categories in which you would place the person named in the response. Person named in the response, by the way, if there are four people in the household, we would ask that four of these be submitted. And for each person, what category would they fall into? Healthcare personnel, long-term care, public safety, adult 70 and over, high-risk medical conditions, frontline workers, someone otherwise not eligible. So these can be multiple. You can be more than one if that's the case. And then we thank them. Stay safe. And we have Justin's name down here. He has agreed to put his name to this. But the town and the town staff will not be responsible for doing anything with the collection of the information or passing it on to those who need it. It will remain confidential. And by that, I mean only those with a need to know will have access to it. And the information will gladly be turned over to whoever it turns out would be responsible for the actual vaccinations. So that's it. Any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
I think it's really important to make it very clear to people that if they have another avenue to get a vaccine and they are able to get there, they should take advantage of that. This is, don't hold out for this, because, and that needs to be clear, you know, on the sheet that if your doctor's office gets in touch with you, don't say, oh, I'm going to wait and do it on Shebig, because we don't know that this will ever happen. We hope it will, but we don't know. Bo.
Is there going to be a way to update the information? Say you're put on the list for Shebig. Is there a way, and you get a shot from the doctor, is there a way to
take yourself off the list? Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. I think what we should do is work in a mechanism of some kind. If they say they want a shot on Shebig, and in the meantime they end up going to the mainland, we should find that out. Good point. Thank you, Bo.
Yeah, that was good, Bo. Anyone else on the board before I go to the audience? Yes, Jay.
I actually tried to go on the SurveyMonkey to get this earlier and couldn't get it, but it's interesting to see it. There are a couple of things that strike me. One is it's a potential HIPAA disaster. Two, it replicates what CDC is, main CDC is already putting together, as well as all of the major health systems in Maine, whether it's InterMed, Martin's Point, Maine Med. You know, I'm not sure that I see the benefits versus the potential downside. And I think it's not a great idea at all. Sorry, well, Dave.
What I can say is that this is totally voluntary, and actually Nancy could possibly speak about HIPAA violations. This would not be, I don't think it'd be a HIPAA violation if you volunteer your name, but Nancy, if you would like to say something, I'll ask you to talk. Nancy, you can talk if you have a point of, yeah.
Nancy, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
It's not a HIPAA violation if the patient gives you permission by putting it on that paper. You're not going to be publishing it. It's only being looked at by healthcare professionals who know all the rules about HIPAA. Nobody's going to find out anything on there, and we've assured that. And they'll be destroyed after they're used.
Where's the record storage going to be?
The record storage will be online with access provided at this point to me to start with, and then only to anybody else with a need to know.
I would only say my earlier comments stand. Sorry.
And in response to your earlier comments, Jay, I would say that, yeah, there are a lot of people working on this. And one of the things that they're not working on, and by that I mean the CDC and so forth, is doing on island vaccinations. And if we really want to try to get online, or excuse me, on island vaccinations, it would help very much to know exactly who needs them, who wants them, and in what priority. And that's the objective here.
But, well, I don't know that this is the place to have that discussion, but it seems to me that home care bound people, the state CDC has really covering all the bases on this. And for us to spin our wheels creating our own registrar in a quickly changing environment seems to me to be a bad use of whatever resources we're going to put into it.
Just to clarify, I had a call from Jenny Hackle yesterday, who's the head of the testing team. And she told me that basically what David's saying, and they will have this information, and they are volunteers, and they're the ones who are going to be doing the work, and they're going to be compiling it and having it. And if something happens that it works and they can get somebody here, that would be great. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And so, you know, it's not really, we're not asking the town to put any more resources in other than just saying, or just publicizing it.
They're putting our name behind it.
That's right, but we're not putting resources into it. I guess that's what I was saying. We're not asking the staff to do it or whatever. Is there
Kip Webb is asking to speak.
Yes, Kip, we'd love to hear from you. You're muted right now, Kip, I think. Can you unmute?
Kip, we can see you, but we can't hear you. Please unmute if you can. Well, that's odd.
And you can't unmute him, David?
Well, I can only ask him to unmute, which I've done.
Maybe put him back and then have him, and then bring him back again and see if that makes a difference.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, Beverly Johnson's asking to talk, so why don't we...
Okay, while we're trying to get Kip straightened around here. Beverly.
I'd just like to say that I've spoken to numerous people. They've called me. They've been trying to get the number. They wanted the number. They've called the number.
Oh, we lost Beverly.
Yeah.
Oh, I think Kip can talk now. Try Kip again. I don't know what happened to Beverly.
Now, Kip is still muted. Beverly, okay. All right, Beverly should be back on now.
Okay, I think you muted me. I think we need to be prepared. I think this idea is so that we are prepared. If, let's say next week or in 2 weeks, we finally find out we can get 200 vaccines here on the island, it's gonna be a free for all to see who's there and who needs it and who hasn't gotten it. I think it's really important. We've got people now that are even in their 80s and 90s who cannot get a vaccine and cannot get off the island. We have people in their 80s who have been trying to get a vaccine, have not been able to make contact, but would love it if something came to. We've got people in their 60s with health problems. And I know of one person I talked today who's going to be 70 in 3 months, but she can't get on a list right now. And I think we need to be, and they always ask, well, what's the town doing? Isn't the town going to do anything? The town should do something. And we don't want people going off the island in wheelchairs to go get shots. We want to be prepared for when they come, when we can get access to the vaccine. And I think just having a list of people now is a great idea to be prepared and thoughtful.
Hey, thank this is Kip. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Kip.
Yes, great, Kip. You. Thank you.
We can hear you.
Oh, wonderful.
Hanging in there.
Yeah, thanks. I'm sorry about that. I'm multitasking and trying to do this over a phone. Hi, everybody. Just wanted to make a couple of different comments. One of them is the reference point for this came from the Island Commons, where we were able to hold a vaccine event for Island Commons residents and the personnel. And we had about half a dozen people, elderly folks, show up at the Island Commons unannounced, saying, hey, I want to get my vaccine. Why can't I get it here? And it's because those things need to be planned in advance. Unlike a flu shot clinic where they show up with lots of doses that don't have to be ultra refrigerated, in this case, they're going to show up with the exact number of doses that they need for the exact number of patients that are going to show up. So having a registry is important. So that's the part one. Part two was with regard to HIPAA. We discussed this a lot internally about do we want to include medical information in the survey or not because of a HIPAA violation. And the way I'm leaning right now is to not include it or give people the option to opt out of including it because right now the state of Maine is not really prioritizing based on pre-existing conditions. It's prioritizing really based on age and types of employment, for example, healthcare workers, frontline responders, et cetera. And so we can get away with not including any health information at all if we choose not to. And then the third point to David's is that if we decide to collect any health information, we will protect that information with very restricted access to it. And it would only be used to inform where somebody is in the queue. For example, a 70-year-old with pre-existing conditions would come in front of the queue ahead of a 70-year-old who had no pre-existing conditions. So hopefully that makes sense.
Thank you, Kip. Anyone want to ask Kip a question before I go to Erica? Kip, will you stay on just in case somebody has a question?
Yeah, I'm staying on, and I will not mess with the mute button.
Okay, Erica.
Hi, great. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Yes.
I just wanted to chime in. I think that the role that the town has played all along has just shown great leadership. I think the role of the Board of Supervisors is to bring the community together, to educate and to organize. That doesn't always mean that the town takes the lead. So to that end, I think that David and Donna's leadership and with the support of the board and Marjorie and now Justin, I think it's really important for the town to show how we come together on big issues. This is the biggest phase we're in right now is the rollout. And what I put in the chats is that Sharon McDonald, an epidemiologist who's now a consultant to DHHS, and the Yarmouth Task Force founder is very close to what's happening in Augusta. And it parallels what's happening in the news, which is supply is coming in spurts. So 16% increase was this week. Next week, it's only going to be 2 or 3%. And it's as they're rolling out the federal pharmacy program. The communities are having a big shift from having immunization hesitancy, so people who are afraid of to a radical change to incredible demand, as if it's Black Friday midnight. And what they're saying is that smaller communities after, to Jay's point, the large medical organizations and then the pharmacies they're going to be in the first line because they're looking at speed and operational capacity so you can reach hundreds and hundreds of people like Scarborough Downs opening today or tomorrow. But right after that, when supply increases, they're going to be looking for the communities who can answer the following questions. We know who our people are. We've put a coalition together of the community organizations, the EMS, the town. We've shown that we can all work together. We have a track record of immunizing people, and we are prepared with information that will feed into your systems. So to Jay's concern, any information that we'll be collecting will be completely coordinated with the CDC. It's designed so that we will know a general list that of course will go into their official database, but they're building that. Dr. Shaw said last week that the federal database to collect this information is completely inadequate. It doesn't collect the information you need from pre-registration, consent forms, tracking, and follow-up. And that's what's being built at the state level. So that's going to take a couple of weeks. So that Shabig would come out now and show leadership from the board with the support of all the nonprofits, that we show that we're one and that we can collect some information so that when our ticket comes up, we can say, yeah, we have our ducks in an order. We have a track record. We have a general idea of our need and we're ready to go. So I can't say enough how I think this is a really excellent form of information collection and a moment for leadership for the Board of Selectmen.
We have somebody from outer space here on Galaxy 57. So, but that person would be next. Whoever Galaxy 57 is.
I think I know who it is, but go ahead.
Hello, Galaxy 57.
Leave.
I think it's Jackie too.
Well, my identity has started coming up Galaxy 7, I believe. at any rate.
It is S7. I know you're from outer space because you live on the West End, but anyway, keep going.
I wanted to chime in support of the registry. And to the point, that the idea that islanders can make appointments on the mainland, of course that is true, but there are potential barriers to getting to your appointment on a particular winter day. Time and tide and storms and general weather conditions. The elderly, of course, I am in that category, but but the other elderly residents who live, in my neighborhood, the ones that I'm thinking of, some of them, it would be very hard for them to travel to the mainland, even on a good day, for some of them. Never mind the winter conditions. That's all.
Thank you, Jackie. I've actually had some of the people who are really housebound over the last two or three weeks who have called me and said, isn't there something you can do? And I mean, as I've reported before, we've reached out to the Island Institute. They're trying to put something together. They have Hannah Pingree involved because this is a problem on all the islands. And they're also talking about the small rural communities, because if anyone had an opportunity to read in the Washington Post, there was an excellent article about what's happened in West Virginia and how West Virginia is a leader. And part of it is because they do have small communities and they're able to think outside the box and figure out how to get to everybody, kind of knows everybody in these communities. And so if you haven't had a chance to read that article, it was a few days ago, I would advise you to do that. I saw Donna Kolbe's hand up.
I'm here.
Go ahead,
Donna. Oh, you are here.
I'm here. I have a question. I'm not sure whether this is one for Kip or not, but when you're talking about queuing up and who goes first and who goes second, whatever, how is it determined that somebody said, well, I have a heart condition, whatever, that they then jump the line or they are ahead of somebody else? Who determines that? How is that determined?
I'll take that question. Yeah, so the Maine CDC has defined the various different phases, and those are being implemented sort of at a county, at a local level. And the prioritization scheme that are proposed for each one of the phases are pretty clear with what the rules are. And with regard to pre-existing conditions, the US CDC and the Maine CDC actually refers you to the US CDC on their website. They have a whole list of pre-existing conditions. The that sort of say these are the ones that we consider high risk factors for severe COVID illness and therefore should be prioritized in terms of vaccination.
So this is just so the person verifies it on their own.
Yeah. So, and I think that's important here, right? You know, because otherwise, you know, we are bringing a lot of those HIPAA questions into play about, you know, how exact do you want to be in prioritizing one person over another? Does somebody with three pre-existing conditions take priority over two pre-existing conditions, et cetera? So I think we want to be pretty careful with getting into the weeds on that, and the honor system would come into play here. So hopefully that answers that question. I'd like to elaborate a little bit further, though, if that's okay with the board.
Sure.
Yeah, so the first thing that I would say is I first got involved with COVID in Maine because after listening to Dr. Shah every day the last spring, what I noticed was that nobody was talking about the island communities, that they really felt like they were being left out in what the state of Maine was planning. So that caused me to lean in. And as you all recall, we met with resistance in the early going with people saying, I don't see why we need this on the island. And all I can say is that we're now over 275 tests that we've done on the island, and we've successfully avoided any outbreaks 1 year into this pandemic. And I'm very proud of that, as you all should be very proud of that. That we moved forward because we felt that there really was a need. Second thing is from my own experience is you have got to be in a queue of some sort if you are going to get a vaccine. And sadly, if your queue happens to be Martin's Point or one of the major medical organizations in Portland, they probably have a queue that you might be able to get in. But if you get your care from a single shingle primary care doc, those docs aren't getting the vaccine right now. And so getting into a queue, do I go to Walgreens? Do I go to CVS? Do I go to Duane Reade? Do I go to my doctor? Do I go to Martin's Point? There's confusion abounding on all of this. And then the last point, and we can help solve some of that confusion by offering shots on the island. And then my last point has to do with the state registry, is that here I am a year into this experience working with Augusta very, very closely. And every step of the way, there has been a time lag between the announcement and the actual delivery of what it was that was promised. And building a registry at a state level and all of the testing it and deploying it and getting it to go live, as somebody who's done that for the last 25 years, these things take time. And I think that it may take more than a few weeks to get that done. Here we're able to build a registry right very quickly using the SurveyMonkey technology, such that if we could arrange for vaccines to be given on the island 2 weeks from now, we would be able to deliver exactly the information necessary for that vaccine sponsoring agency. And so the time is now if we're going to act on this and get vaccines to be delivered to the island in the next 2 weeks.
Thank you, Kip. I don't know if you have heard, but Maine has stopped delivering vaccine to CVS and Walgreens because they have not been able to fulfill their obligation. Or maybe it's CVS and Walgreens.
Just CVS, yeah. The CVS was doing a particularly poor job of getting people vaccinated.
And so they've now gone to the smaller pharmacies in Maine to do the nursing homes and that kind of thing. David, I saw your hand up.
Yeah, I was just wondering if we're ready to offer a motion here.
Okay, just want to make sure there isn't somebody else who wants to speak. Anyone on the board? Anyone in the audience? Okay, so I'm open to a motion.
All right. I move to authorize the administration and analysis of a COVID-19 vaccination survey as presented tonight, sponsored by the town and overseen on behalf of the town by David Hill.
I'll second.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. I'm going to call for a vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
No.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon is yes. And thank you to all of you medical professionals who have been working to keep this community safe. We truly appreciate it. And thank you, David, for your efforts in this.
You're very welcome.
All right, so moving on, communicate.
Donna, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
David, will you forward me that motion, please?
I will.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry, Chris. I had lifted up my agenda and I didn't see anybody. Communications, anyone have any communications that we haven't already talked about? All right, seeing none. So now we want to approve the minutes of, I could have a motion to approve the minutes of January 6, 2021 and January 20th, 2021.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to accept the minutes. And I'm going to call for a vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon says yes as well. So that is done. Now, under other business, one of the things that I just wanted to talk about just for a minute, we had talked briefly about having a building facilities committee, and then we decided to kind of put it on the back burner. And I guess I want to make just a statement that nobody expects there to be an addition built on the firehouse or a new town hall in the next, in the short term, let's put it that way. But if we start actually thinking about it and actually having people study it and see what options are, we're never going to do it because it's always going to be, it takes 2 or 3 years to do this kind of work. And I don't want to get into a big debate about it tonight, but I am going to bring it up in the future because we already see that the fire department's talking about having per diem people who might have to have a place to stay over. We already know we don't have a vault in the town office. And just because we have a committee that goes through and identifies all of the issues that we need to think about doesn't mean something's going to be built in the next 5 years or 10 years or even built at all, but at least we have the information to know so we can actually talk about it and not have the shotgun approach, because that's what I'm concerned about. We saw what happens with the shotgun approach last winter with the decon room, and a whole bunch of us, almost everybody in this board, tried to solve that problem. And we were scrambling, and we put a lot of energy into it for naught. And we lost money in the long run that we could have benefited other aspects of the town. And I just think that we have to start thinking long-term about some of these issues. Another is the stone wharf. That fits into the same category. And I'd like to have a workshop where we talk about what's the process for going forward on these two areas. And again, it's a similar kind of thing. I don't think we need a committee for the stone wharf because we already have a committee that's included probably half of the people who have lived on Chabig more than 20 years have been on some kind of a stone wharf committee. But, it comes down to, I think we all have narrowed it down. I don't think there's any debate. Structural integrity. Is the wharf structurally sound? Does it need something done? Sea level rise. Are we going to address sea level rise or not address sea level rise? How do we make it safer? And is there any solution to any parking? Those are really the four issues that we have to deal with. But if we don't ever start to deal with any of it, nothing's ever going to happen. So that's just my soapbox. Justin, I saw your hand up.
Just in reference to Stone Wharf, I didn't put it in my administrative report because I submitted it before I had conversations. But since the last meeting, I've talked to Barney Baker, and I have a meeting tomorrow with Wright Pierce about what a design level assessment, like Donna just mentioned, about what the stability is of the wharf, what that would look like and what they might be able to provide. So I might have some ideas for you in that realm in the coming weeks.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin, for being proactive on that, because we can't do anything up there until we answer the question. I mean, some of us think we already know the answer, but enough people in the community don't think we know the answer. And so we need, before you put any, do anything, you need to know is that what structurally needs to happen up there. And so that really is the found, no pun intended, foundation of the whole issue. But anyway, so that's my other business. Anybody else have any other business they want to discuss? Mark, and then Bo.
Not really other business, just very quickly. We have our budget workshop this coming Saturday morning, 9 a.m. We're going to focus on the departments of the town. I would ask that all selectmen be prepared with their specific questions, if they have any, for each department, and be ready. I'm going to run an efficient meeting. We're going to have Justin talk very quickly if he has anything to point out with each department before we get going. Then I'm going to go alphabetically with each select person. They'll have a opportunity to speak specifically about any line items or the department as a whole. And we'll go through each select person, each department. We will allow any public comment after all the selectmen have asked their questions for each department. We're going to go through each one efficiently. And so that's what I would ask you to be ready for on Saturday. The next budget workshop after that appears to be on February 17th at a scheduled selectmen's meeting, and it says second draft of budget and discussion. So I'm not sure what you guys have in mind there. It's certainly not a capital budget discussion, so it's probably the second whack at some adjustments that may or may not be made this coming Saturday. And then the next Saturday workshop is February 27th, which will be 9 a.m. And that is nonprofits and capital. So be ready to go this Saturday and we'll go down through it fairly well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark, for that advertisement. I hope people come. And there's still some attendees out there. So please tell your friends, because it's really difficult to present, to work on a budget in a vacuum. And if we don't hear from the public, we may make decisions that you're not happy with, but if we don't know what your concerns are, we can't address them. So it's free. There's nothing else to do on Saturday morning in the middle of a global pandemic. 9 o'clock, might as well tune in. Bo, it's your turn.
Just wanted to, I got a couple emails today from you, Justin, about, I can't remember now. Is there a adjusted budget out there from the last one we got?
So I'm trying to think. I sent you one. I sent you the backup for the salaries in the office today. So you'll have that for Saturday. It has the salary breakdowns. And I sent the EMS per diem proposal. And what else? Did I send some?
It says her hand up.
Bo, there's stuff in the mailbox for you.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure I get it in the mailbox. I didn't get that.
Do you want a hard copy of the budget? That one that Justin just kind of fixed the size and stuff like that?
Yeah, if I can get one of those, please.
Okay. I'll put it in with the other stuff.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else have anything that they would like to bring up under the business? All right.
Donna,
yes, David.
You may have skipped communications, if there are any communications.
I did say communications.
Okay. I apologize.
Nobody said anything.
Yep.
All right. So I guess I would like to have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we adjourn. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon, and thank you all for coming and participating. And thank you all of the attendees for being here. We appreciate the staff. We appreciate the attendees, and we appreciate the volunteer efforts of the Board of Selectmen. And have a good night. And now I'm going to go eat my Otto's pizza.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.